Strange but true. Is this working? This doesn't work. The rabbi will not take it. Okay. Good evening, everyone. This evening's discussion begins in the zoo. So they're asking already, what is he talking about? Did I come to the wrong class? No. I will explain myself, as Ricky Ricardo used to say. As some of you know, whenever I visit a major city, I always go to the zoo. Now you may ask, why? Or what benefit? Aren't they all the same? Well, that's the whole point. If you look at how the same institution is handled in different cultures or in different civic arenas, so to speak, then what you learn to do is to see both the commonalities, in other words, what's going on in the world of zoos, if you will, but also you begin to be able to perceive the differences. For that reason, what I was hoping we could do this evening, we are beginning our work on Yom Kippur. And at least for this first week, I would like to land in a spot on Yom Kippur which is actually quite similar in certain ways to the spot where we did our work on Rosh Hashanah. Now, as those of you who have been following this saga will remember, we generally locate ourselves in the midst of what is called the Kiddushta. Kiddushta is the introduction of piyut poetry in the repetition of the Amida. Now, one of the things that makes Yom Kippur interesting is that there is this piyut stuff, so to speak, this poetry from the late classical and early medieval period, goes all the way into the Renaissance, but mostly late classical and medieval, that accompanies not only Shacharit, because in the land of Israel, Shacharis was one of the places where you said Kedusha. On a regular Shabbos, just like this, there would have been no Kedusha. Only Shacharis. No Kedusha in Musaf, I mean. Okay. Only in Shacharis. So, for example, if you came to Shul and you wanted to hear the Chazan make a big deal out of something, you would have to come early before the Torah reading. Listen, they're already groaning. It's unbelievable. So don't get nervous. We're not going back to that. We give the Chazan has a lovely Kedusha in Musaf every week, and he can fill it up with tunes from My Fair Lady and whatever the heck he wants to his heart's content. Right. Even in ancient Palestine, in the classical period, Yom Kippur was different. The prayers of Yom Kippur were more elaborated than they were really at any other season. As a result, unusual, we actually have material from our patron saint, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, attached to Musaf. Now this is interesting because it's going to come, because it is a Kedushta, it is going to come in many of the same slots that we have been experiencing in Rosh Hashanah. As you remember, just to review, you will get a chunk of poetry in the first blessing, the blessing that has to do with the patriarchs. You will get another chunk of poetry in the second blessing, which has to do with the resurrection of the dead, etc. And then you will get several, almost a bouquet of several different types of poetry on the way to the Kedusha. Now, the most famous piece in that elaboration is actually, if I remember correctly, a replacement. In other words, there was a piece by our friend Rabbi Elazar HaKalir just before the recitation of the Kedusha on Yom Kippur. However, it was replaced. And it was replaced by one of the most famous pieces of piyut, medieval, not classical, that you know, and that is known as Unasana Tokef. But just know that Unasana Tokef is essentially a how would we call it? A switch out? Is that the term? There must be something from base, from basketball or one of those balls that I don't do. A swap out, I think that's what I think, is a swap out for an earlier piece of poetry that functioned in the same space.
A do-over.
Whatever. Because it was, because Unasana Tokef was just so good. Oh, was so good. They couldn't resist it. It's like when Rav Hirt, it's mentioned by Rav Ephraim of Bonn. I may be speaking about that later, so you'll have to wait.
Since the tape is off, I can ask.
It's on.
What we learned last week, that was on Avot.
Correct.
So how can that be a Kedushta? Is that still
a Kedushta? Kedushta is all of the poetry in a repetition which will eventually get to Kedusha.
Okay.
But that is, thank you for asking, Shem, because I probably didn't make that. A Kedushta is the entire poetic bouquet, all the different kinds of poetry that will be introduced in the course of the repetition of a Shemoneh Esrei, which has a Kedusha. If you have a repetition of a Shemoneh Esrei which does not have a Kedusha, then it's not a Kedushta, it's only a Krova. Right? Okay, now to the good stuff. So what I thought we would do last week and the week before, we did Oschil Yom Pekuda, which is a passage from Shachris on Rosh Hashanah, the Kedushta of Shachris, in the sweet spot. The first one, which is the Magen, because it accompanies the blessing Magen Avraham. We are going to now move to Yom Kippur, although to Musaf, and look at another Magen, same sweet spot. You will find as we go, little bits of knowledge and language that you have already mastered if you've been paying attention. And if you haven't, you have another chance. Isn't that what Yom Kippur is about? Second chances? Okay. So you're in good space. So let us now turn. Now what you're going to like about this, I'll tell you what you're going to like about this. You're going to be so excited. This is another instance where he should rest in peace. Dr. Birnbaum did us dirty. I loved the man. He was the cutest man in the world. I knew him when I was working on the west side of Manhattan when I was in Smicha. And one time I went up to him. Did I ever tell you this story? I went up to him and said, Dr. Birnbaum, I miss the Vilna Gaon. I missed Rav Yaakov Emden. And I missed Rav Amram Gaon, who were all great makers of Sidurim. But I'm so happy to know you.
Did that?
I really did. You wonder why I didn't get many lunch invitations. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is join me on page 763. Norman, I'm not going to put up with this. You have to use the same book as the rest of us. I have plenty of extra copies. If someone could help Dr. Adler, we'll get it for you. We have the house team. Because you'll fall down in the meantime. You'll miss the whole drusha. Okay, the... Page 700 and, well, it's going to be 765 in a minute, but I want you to look on page 763. I want you to imagine where you are. Even people who walk out of shul tend to still be here at this point. Because the Chazan, 763. Just join me there. That, see there it says, Chazoras HaTfilo LeShaliach Tzibur. The beginning of the, and it's not Al-Khait at that point. The Al-Khait, you turn past the Al-Khait. That was your personal Al-Khait because you just finished. I didn't mean, Bella doesn't have any sins. She just says it for others of us. The 763, let me just locate you. Even people who are going to leave early are still here at this point. The Chazan has said, Hineni, right? The people are just waking up after my sermon. They're just coming back. Oh yeah, where am I? Oh yes. Right? We've already said Yisker, and the Chazan is saying Hineni, and we're about to start Musaf. Everyone has just finished the silent Shemona Esrei. Why has no one walked out yet? Because everyone's waiting for what? Onisana Tokev. Everybody knows we're past that. Everyone's waiting for Onisana Tokev. Now, in our shul, at least I can speak from my experience in the main sanctuary, it is a remarkable thing to me, and is really a tribute to Tar Chazan, that the shul is full straight through Musaf. In the shul I grew up in, after they figured out mi yichye mi yamus, the question was, whose house are we going to? That was the next tough question. So the shul emptied out, and only the shtarkers stayed around to daven the rest of Musaf. But at this point, even the bums who used to sit behind me when I was a kid, these were like the family of the children of the grandchildren of the rich guys in the shul who we never saw from one high holidays to the next. Even they were still in the room, right? And the Chazan, they open the ark, and the Chazan sings the beautiful Nusach of Avos, and then you turn to page 765. And after Misod Chachamim Unevonim, which is the standard opening, that sort of, it is the open sesame of the Ali Baba's cave of Piyut, right? That allows you to introduce material into the repetition of the Amidah, which was a big halachic fight. We then begin a paragraph, Shoshan Emek Ayuma. Everybody's in the room. The room is full. And if you're looking like this, like you never saw it in your life, I'm not surprised. Why? Because how do people experience this? Right? And most of the people are not really reading it. They're just saying Jabba, 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 Jabba. What? Which people say. Now, the other thing that our dear friend has done for us is by mushing it all together, you cannot see where the phrases and the lines begin. The phrases are all three-word phrases. And there are two of those phrases to a line and two lines to a stanza, right? So, what can you tell me about the four phrases, the first four phrases? Where does the first stanza end? What is the last word of the first stanza?
Litzaima.
Exactly, Litzaima. Now, what can you tell me about each of... Now, of course, right, you're used to... I've given you all baby stuff already, because you know that when you're dealing with Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, you will almost always be dealing with what? Acrostic. Now, their acrostic can go in one of two ways, usually. You either start at the beginning of the alphabet and go to the end, or you start at the end of the alphabet or go to the beginning. So on this, I will parenthetically show you something very interesting. This doesn't count. Stop the clock, although I will not stop the recording. If you will look on page... Be kind enough to turn to page 785 for just a moment. 785. One of your favorites, right, on the way to Unasana Tokev, is the one. It starts Imru Elokim, and then it shifts, and it's really another poem, to Maase Elokeinu. Right? The Chazan goes, and people chime in as if they're so intelligent. Maase Elokeinu, yaha. Okay? Now, the interesting thing here is, look at the Maase Elokeinu. You see where it starts. What's the first real stanza?
Adir.
What's the second? What's the next verse? What's the next phrase? What's the next phrase?
Well, but it's only two words.
Yeah, okay. But it's the next one is going to be Barum. The next one is going to be Gilo. The next one is going to be Dovar. Marilyn, what are we dealing with here? Alphabetical acrostic. Starting with Aleph and going through the letter. However, turn to the next page. On the next page, you see Avol Maaseh Elo, Avol, you see Maaseh Enosh? Look at the top of the page. Maaseh Enosh is the one, you remember, you know how they, this is where people, there's certain things that alrightniks know that make them alrightniks. So the alrightniks love to know that you have to quickly close the Aron Kodesh and quickly open it up again, right? This is how you prove that you're the Vilna Gaon. Of psycho, you know, you get so impressed with yourself. So Maaseh Enosh, give me the acrostic on Maaseh Enosh. Maren, what does it start with?
Tough.
What's next?
Shin.
Shin.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What's next? Reish. What is happening on this acrostic?
Backwards.
It is going backwards. But do you know how this was meant to be recited? This little Maaseh Enosh, this little guy, was a complete alphabet going backwards. There was a Maaseh Enosh for each Maaseh Elokeinu. I guess the guy trying to open and close the ark, his arm got tired, so they got rid of all the Maaseh Enosh except for the first one. So what this should have been was Adir B'Vi'udo, Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet, Avol, starting from the other end of the alphabet. Avol, Maaseh, Enosh, Tachbelosav, Mezima, blah, blah, blah. So the way it was supposed to be formulated, and we have the left out verses, it was the acrostics were mirror images. One was going Aleph to Tuf, the other was going Tuf to Aleph. Shall I ask you? A little bit. Chiastic, if you insist, or something like that. But more important, what are letters in Hebrew?
Numbers.
Letters are numbers.
Oh, but they're also...
So in the Maaseh Elokeinu, in the spiritual life, you begin with Aleph. And you move, and what do you have when you finish? You have Tuf, you have 400. You have the highest value. In the Maaseh Enosh, in the human enterprise, in the material world, you begin with 400, and as you move through the verses, the value of what you have dissolves in your hands until at the end you're left with an Aleph, which may or may not be an Aleph for afar, for dust. You're left with nothing. Now, go back with me now. Now that I've got you looking for all your Alephs and your Tufs, now I want to frustrate the heck out of you. Because what did you start with that was so well identified? The first verse, what do you got four times of?
Shin.
Four shins. What do you got in the next one?
Base.
So I'll ask you a wonderful question.
And it goes to Tuf.
Why do you have shins and bets and Tufs
nice.
And... Where's the olives? Where's that? Where's anything? Because what? Oh, keep going. You have Shabbos, right? The first verse start is Shin, then Beis, Shabbos, and then it starts again with Shin, and it spells out. Good, Mark. You're very quick. Shabbos, Shabbaton, which is of course the name of Yom Kippur, the Sabbath of Sabbaths. So this time, HaKalir is not using an alphabetical acrostic. This time he is using the name of Yom Kippur as his organizing principle, the Sabbath of Sabbaths. And he's using, how many times is it actually repeated? How many Shabbos, Shabbosons are there in the midst? He says Shabbos, Shabboson, the whole thing. The Sabbath of Sabbaths. That's the name of Yom Kippur. But how many times he ends up with? Four. So, as will become apparent, since the number of four is going to be featured in the centerpiece of this paragraph, why is the number four, among other things, so important on Yom Kippur? The number four is a big Yom Kippur. If you're going to be playing the lottery on Yom Kippur, go some with four. Why? What's the four fetish? Because it is the only day of the year when we have four tefillos. Shachris, Musaf, Mincha, and Ne'ilah. So the four prayers of Yom Kippur give us the four repetitions of Shabbat Shabbaton inscribed in the acrostic, but not only there, it will also appear in the middle. Now what I'd like you to help me do, let's locate ourselves. We are... What'd you say?
Where is it repeated four times?
Well, you see Shoshan Emek Ayuma, then Shabbos Shabbaton Lekaima, Shoresh. In other words, it's four shins. But you have to remember, it's like my Akdamas joke. Did I ever tell you my Akdamas joke? I certainly did, but I'm so grateful to anyone who pretends I didn't. Do you know how Yekis say Akdamas? They got the chaz and says, Akdamos me when Shiroshu, down like Aram knows or do, and then he goes, ta 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 ta. So in this one, all the Shabbat Shabbaton, do you understand that one? Because they print it with the ta is always printed at the end of the line separate. This really falls apart when you have to explain it. It's really, this joke probably has earned retirement. Anyway, let's now take a look. Before we've done anything else, I hope that when Yom Kippur comes around and everyone else is going, so, you will be looking at this differently because you're going to be looking in your eye, you're going to do word processing, you're going to re-space it in the way that Birnbaum obliterated. You're going to put it back, and so you're going to restore the shins and the bets, etc., etc. Now let's take a few of those, let's take some of those verses. Now this time, Jessica is going to tell us what kinds of themes are we likely to have in mind considering where this is located. Now you know this already based on our experience over the last couple of weeks. Which bracha are we working in? Whose bracha is this? This is the bracha of Magen Avraham. So you are in the land of the patriarchs and matriarchs of Israel. When you are within this bracha, you have to imagine that you are in their palace. And that means that the poetry is going to be very cognizant and is particularly going to be interested in explaining their unique function in this particular moment of this particular day, right? Which is going to be different, for example, from Oschil Yom Pekudo, when we spoke about Avraham as the first person to approach God as the judge, right? You're going to find he's going to be... Right, and Avraham is part of Bereshis, good. Somebody was listening. I am so gratified, not wasting my life here. Okay, so you at home, don't cheat. If you don't remember it from last week, don't replay it and then pretend you did. Okay, so let's go through some of these because they're very beautiful. And what, especially those of you who were new are going to experience your first confrontation with the mystery of the way a piyut is put together. But those of you who have been hanging around a while are going to begin to feel more comfortable. More pieces are going to make sense. Do it with me. Let's see. Shoshan Emek Uyamoth. Who is the Shoshan Emek? Is the Jewish. Excellent. It's from Shir HaShirim. Thank you very much. Say good, say better. The Jewish people who are called right? Shoshanas Yaakov, etc. The Shoshana. Nasa Nesla Shoshanim. Las Elos Nesla Shoshanim. We're all ticking well. So the lily of the valley, literally. Uyamo. Now, uyamo is a form of the verb. It means probably ayem, to terrify. Is in a state of some terror. The ayem, to scare somebody, right? Why? Shabbos Shabboson Lekaimo. That's pretty easy. They are in a state of heightened awe, if you will, anxious to fulfill the Sabbath of Sabbaths, right? Yom Kippur. Shoresh V'anav Siyamo. Now this I want you to pay very careful, Now, CMO, we've seen before with, I think, about Sari Menu, means to make up one's mind or to determine. But what does he say? Shoresh ve'anaf. What is Shoresh ve'anaf?
The root.
Well, which part's good? Good. Shoresh is the root, and the anaf is the leaf. So the root and the leaf are not, okay, and then the branch. The root and the branch have made up their minds. Shavim yachad litzaima. Shavim yachad means equally litzaima. To fast for it, or probably for the fast. Now, I just want you to keep this in mind. First of all, put together Shoshan Emek and Shoresh Ve'anaf. What do you see here in the parallelism? He's drawing. There is a sound. There are sound. Sound similarities, excellent, Marilyn. But he's drawing from the botanical, he's using botanical imagery. Right? Lilies of the valley, and then the branches and the root. Now, who are the branches? Who are the branches and the roots?
He says parents and children.
So he says parents and children. But you see the devilish misery of the translation, because you can't connect it to what's really happening in the Hebrew. Because it doesn't mean parents and children. Sure, it refers to parents and children. But it's talking about two parts. The oldest part of the tree
and
the youngest part of the tree. Now this, shavim, artia. Now, when you talk about, in this case, parents and children, could someone just remind me, because I've suffered sudden amnesia, what is the name of this bracha? That's the bracha. What do we call this bracha? It's called Avos. It's called Avos. It's about the parents of the Jewish people. So we are, before we even get started, we have not yet mentioned Avraham, but we are doing an alignment of generations. And it is not just it, at one level it is, that parents and children, the shul is full with everyone, old and young, are standing together. But there's another alignment, that we are standing together with the matriarchs and patriarchs of Israel. We are standing next to, we who are the branch, are standing beside our roots and observing Yom Kippur together. Next verse, quickly. Be'es Motu Yisodosel. Second theme of Yom Kippur. Remember who was writing this. Who is our author here?
God.
No. The author of the piyut?
Eliezer.
Eliezer HaKalir. Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. His relationship. What was his obsession around Tisha B'Av? What was his obsession? We all know. He gave us 18 kinos, for God's sake. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. 500 years later, and he hasn't gotten over it. And on Yom Kippur, there is no festival in which the Beis HaMikdash is more acutely missed. It is first conjured, and then the image is shattered before our eyes. The after you finish Marek Kohen, the heartbreak of not being able to be in the temple to achieve the pageant of forgiveness is just it. That's why you have Ela Ezkara. The whole theme of the last portion of Musaf is loss. So he introduces this theme very early, and he says Be'es Motu Yisodosel. When its foundations were shaken or moved, right? Meaning, when we lost the temple, Botcha Bechin Mosdoseha. She, meaning Shoshan Emek, the lily of the valley, Israel, came to have faith, trusted, Bechin, you remember Chin from last week? Right. We said the it's one of the one of the things which he says he returns again and again as one of the synonyms for prayer, for as in tachnunim. So the word chin, see, the word chin is one of those words where if you're not Jewish, it could probably land you in the hospital, right? But but even it's one of those words which, if you're not used to piyut, if you're not used to words being, first of all, verbs being turned into nouns and vice versa, and also being truncated, it would throw you off. But you're all getting good at this. Botcha b'chin mosdoseha. Mosdoseha, it doesn't mean as in modern Hebrew, mosdoseha, it's organizations. It means its foundations, its roots. Who, the prayer of those who laid its foundations, is who? Again, back to the Avos. But notice the shift. Notice the shift. We have moved from which lexicon. If you were illustrating this in the first verse, this is why Birnbaum's parents and children are pain in the neck. In the first verse, where were we taking our metaphors, our imagery? From the botanicals, from the gardens. But now when we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash, where are our images coming from? The imagery. No. It's the point. It's going to be, they're going to point toward architecture and building. You notice? Because we're first talking about the foundations of the temple being shaken, and then we refer to the patriarchs as mosdoseha, those who are her foundations, the foundations of Israel, the founders of Israel. Boom! Tok o yisedoseha. And she set her, I guess you would call them
pegs,
the tent pegs, in them. In other words, when you move over to tent pegs already, who lives in a tent?
Nomads.
We are, when we become the wandering people because we don't have the temple anymore. And we need to find a place somehow to attach ourselves to the ground. We set the tent pegs in them. Not literally, figuratively. They provide stability. They provide context. The chefel lehashin yudoseha. What's chefel?
Double.
What?
Double.
Good. Double trouble. Good. Excellent. They are referred to. The sleeping patriarchs and matriarchs of Israel are called, they refer to Kefel as Maras HaMachpelah, but it really means those who are in the Maras HaMachpelah, the residents of Machpelah.
How is Kefel and
Maras HaMachpelah? Machpelah means the place of pairs. Because the patriarchs and matriarchs are there in pairs. That's one of the reasons it's called Machpelah. Now, when we go to Kefel, we go to that. What was, just for the heck of it, remind me.
What?
Maras HaMachpelah is what?
Where the patriarchs and Adam and Chava.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the first permanent structure owned by Jews. Aside from being the first land that they earned, it was also the first permanent structure.
It's the oldest probably permanent structure that still exists in Israel.
Quite possible. So, in other words, this homeless people is going back to the matriarchs and patriarchs who are still holding on to that little piece of real estate when everything else has gone into exile. We go back to them, but to them described in terms of their little cave. Lehashin yudoseha. Lashin usually means to lean. Yedoseha here, though, means the door, the door frame. It doesn't mean hands literally. This is this term, and there are sources. This is the tzir v'yadit hadelet. This is the door frame, right, and the handle. In other words, we're now seeing. Before we saw foundations, now we're seeing it in another dimension. We're seeing the avos and imos as the beginning of a rising structure, right? A door frame. So what does that mean? Now we know... I'm sorry?
It's a building.
It's a building already. So we know, right? We know that the absence of the temple is a crisis. It's a crisis in how to find God. How do you replace it? And so what Kalir is doing here is, and it's very ingenious, and I honestly, I'm not quite sure if he's actually quoting or creating midrashic material, because I haven't seen in any of the notes that this concept was that it is the avos themselves who are the replacement for the temple, that we hold on to the avos and they give us our parallel reality.
Our patrimony.
I read an interpretation that Sarah's tent was holier than the Beit HaMikdash.
That would be a good. It would probably be in the same in the same
patrimony
line.
Patrimony and avos is the same word.
Well, patrimony is just Latin for
right. It's the same idea.
And as patrimony,
that which comes
as a legacy. Okay, good. Okay, next verse. Tomcha b'foal surim. Now here, you're going to have to deal with the avos coming back yet again in another form. What are they this time? Surim.
Rocks.
Rocks and also... rocks and mountains, because they talk about the rock from which you were hewn, right? So a tsur can be a rock as a geographical, Hashem tsuri v'goali. It's not just like the kind of, it's not a stone, it's a rock formation attached to the ground. So tomcha b'po'al tsurim. She leans on the deeds of the rock, of the rocks. The rocks here, or the mountains, very common imagery for the avos and the imos. You'll find the imos in the next one as hills. So notice we have moved from botanical to architectural to something more geological. Right? And in each of these, in every context, it's a little bit like a Rorschach test, that we look at all fields of human endeavor, and in each one, or in areas of nature, in each one we see the outline of the avos. Right? So tomcha b'foal tsurim, she leans on the deeds. Foal here means as in poal, a verb, or pi'ilut in modern Hebrew. Tumas hemo hayotzer. Now here I'm going to push a new theory at you. When you hear this verse, tumas hemo hayotzer, what do you hear when you hear tumas? Okay. So, in the real translation, it is from Hishalech lefonai v'heyesamim. It means perfect or of perfect faith. Right? But when you first hear tumas, it sounds like death is somewhere.
You put it down. Yuma tumas.
Right. Because in the passive, to be put to death would be the same thing. And if you really want to push it, if you're in a pronunciation of Hebrew that doesn't make a differentiation between tet and tough, you could be hearing tumat as in defilement. I would push only for tumat. And now I will tell you my theory. The theory which is mine is my theory, and it is a theory, and it is mine. I think that Hakalir practices what I would call word bombing. What does word bombing mean? word bombing means words that can be, are in their real, you know, when you really understand what he means, they have a meaning, but the meaning is just a little bit obscure. However, the word taken by itself, if you just hear it, sounds like something else. And that something else is the kind of a theme that at some level you're also expecting to hear about. What is this theory? My theory is that particularly in the earlier parts of the of any given set of piyut, your most difficult stuff is coming first. That was intended for the scholars. So the question is, what happened to the regular people while this was going on? And that's why I believe that Kalir planted these little word bombs that sound like concepts which the average man would, or woman, would associate with something about Yom Kippur or something about any given holiday. So if you're a scholar like the judge, you hear Tumat and you do your whole homework and you know he's Halech Lefanai Behei Yisomim, you know it has a relationship with Avraham Avinu and Tomim Tiyem, Hashem Lokecho, it's about faith, it's about perfection. But if you are a simple shoemaker who's hearing the chazan and he doesn't understand a word, because that whole chin thing and chefel from Maras HaMachpel, he doesn't know a word. All of a sudden he hears Tumat. He hears Tumat. He knows what Tumat is. As my Rebbe used to tell us the cute story about when they say that there was a terrible fate in store for the Jews, and the Baal Shem Tov was terribly, terribly upset, and he was just racking his brain to figure out what he could say that would move the court of heaven to set aside this verdict. And he was walking, and he walked by the window of a very simple, poorly educated Jew. And with all his heart, the Jewish saying Vehisha Amda. He says, Shalo Echad Bilvad Omad Aleinu Lechaloseinu. They all tried to give us challah. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzileinu Miyodam. But Hashem gave us matzah. Right? Now, that story is funny, but it is an illustration of the concept of the word bomb. A word which, even though it makes perfect literary sense, also threatens to jump the rail and for a moment just to create its own context. And I'll show you one or two other examples as we go on, that even a simple person would think that he understood something, and that word functioning in its own context would be relevant to the spiritual experience of the tefillah.
Does this sort of relate to what you were discussing a few weeks ago? You said that something isn't, that what Kalir is doing, it's not always elusive, but sometimes, this was a good word, it's almost a feint, F-E-I-N-T, that
right.
You think you're going in a different direction and then
exactly.
It pulls you back. So even if it's not the shoemaker, I think even the slightly more sophisticated person might be taken off in a certain direction. Then he sees the next few words and he pulls back and he realizes.
Right, he's like a good quarterback, you know, he fakes to the right and then he goes left. But that's what I mean by the word bomb. And you're 100% right, Shian. You don't have to be a shoemaker to be taken in by it. But you see, the shoemaker, that might be all he gets. That's my point. You see, I find out, I'll give you 1 second, Jeff. One of the things that I so love about Kalir is once you get used to this notion that he is simultaneously addressing a number of audiences, every once in a while you see the depth of the man's commitment to his entire audience, that no one in the shul should feel completely left out. And even when he is working at the top of his game, he makes sure to put something in. You know, that I remember one year when I first came to the shul, I don't know, I gave a sermon about, what was the name? There was a television program about everybody who came to this bar.
Cheers.
Cheers, right? Cheers had its last episode, and I gave a sermon about it. And I remember there was one older gentleman who came to me after shul. He was so excited because, honestly, I guess my sermons in those days were a little on the esoteric side. And there was never anything for him to talk to me about. But Cheers, that he could talk to me about. And it was his connection. And I think that is sort of the cognate of the Kalirian word bomb that comes because he is not forgetting that the shoemakers are out there and they also need to do tshuva. Yes, ma'am. Jeff, I promise Jeff. I'm sorry, I promise Jeff.
It's like Shakespeare, appeal to all lovers.
Yeah.
In his original, there was none of this punctuation, semicolons, and periods that all probably ran straight. Right?
No.
They had some sort of.
Well, they certainly had it spaced with lines and stuff. A lot of the early manuscripts are spaced. I don't know if they had semicolons. Semicolons are a very sophisticated piece of instrument.
I don't even know if I remember what this is, but the words onomatopoeia come to my mind. Isn't that if something sounds like something?
Like what it is.
So isn't this a little bit like that? In other words, that even though most of the words mean something a little bit different, but it's also giving another meaning.
Except onomatopoeia is about the actual sound, like flip-flops.
Bach book,
flip-flops. But not, right, not meanings. Okay. But it's a related, yes.
This is a beautiful you're talking about word bombing. Would this be sort of an example of word bombing? Put the rose in my hair like the Andalusian girl and she wrote yes and you kiss me under the Jewish wall.
Stay, keep Joyce out of this. Okay.
Isn't that word bombing?
Of a different sort, to be dealt with at some
this
point.
This is a
very impressive.
This is a puzzle. Thing. Every word you're supposed to make allusion.
Yeah, but the puzzle also the puzzle is really prayer. It's not just games. Okay, I want to do one more before we have to let the Marv people take over, because this is where I promise you we'd get to the number four. This time, I can't do that. I didn't finish three well enough. I have too much to do in three. I just had to him. Terufa tes la'atsurim. Give a... Terufa is a medicate. Give a healing taste. See, you see how much more of this you're getting? The words are... You're beginning to work with... La'atsurim.
Atsurim.
No. Although, I'm not beyond him putting in a joke. Atsurim here, though, is one of two things. It is either those people who are huddled in... Who were huddled in exile, or other of the classical Mefarshim say those who have come together atzurim to daven in the shul, tevel lahafil latzurim. This is the only time he says it.
To stop,
right? To be occluded. Tevel lahafil latzurim. Tevel is one of his favorite words. It always refers to the earth. Leha'afil, what's afela? To make the world dark, latsarim, for the enemies. Notice how he plays the atsurim against the tsarim. The atsurim is us, so to speak, those who are, in a sense, detained, but almost in a narrow place. And the tsarim are those who bring tsar, who bring narrowness, if you will, pain to others. This is the only place in this piyut where he refers to the enemies of Israel. He doesn't get too upset with that. We're going to finish this guy next week. I'm going to nail him, and then I'm going to have some treat for you for the third of the Yom Kippur pieces. Thanks a million, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Absolutely, isn't it normally negative that it's people growing?